You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 23rd of January, 2020. On the podcast today, Kyle Frail, Executive Chairman of Open Orphan, provides an update in respect of their proposed placing for £5 million and discusses what the funds will be used for. Also on the podcast, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers ASOS, Hotel Chocolat, and Mothercare, all of which had news out today. Also talk about, I mentioned Blue Prism, which I quite like, but it's one of those stocks that's massively overvalued because it's into robotics and AI, and it's got that sort of future hope priced in, which is crazy, really. Plus, on the podcast as well, two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see both these lists, in fact, top 10 versions of both these lists, and I direct your attention to the most followed list. Always worth looking at that. Why are people following certain companies? It's worth checking it out, because if the share price hasn't risen, you think, okay, people are reading that, they may be investing in it, they're researching it, and it's worth, you know, following that attention flow, that money flow, maybe. And you can check those out there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Cahill Friel, Executive Chairman of Open Orphan. Cahill, thanks for joining me.
Just as a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, you're on early in the week, and now you've done an update on the placing today. So just give us the details of this. What is it about? I mean, you did mention you're doing a placing anyway, but why have you done an update here, Carl? What's going on here?
Yeah, look, just perfectly honest, I might have been hands up a bit too lippy early in the week. So look, this is just as a market confidence or market sentiment. One is that, look, to make it clear, we are on the road. We said we'd be on the road. We're doing a placing this week, and early next week we're meeting predominantly institutions. It's going well, and it's really just to reassure people. And look, on a look through of our document, it kind of indicates the placing would be done around 6.3. all that I was doing was confirming I've underwritten the placing, 50% of it, and I'm participating in it. And all else really that I should be saying, and I will be saying until it's over, is that, look, we would have an expectation that the current placing will be done at a premium to our last 5.6 round.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what I like, though, is that you've been really honest and transparent about doing a placing, because it's the tradition with AIM companies, they try and keep it quiet as possible, but that shows confidence, and it gives, you know, investors at least some transparency here. They feel they're not being left behind, because that happens on so many AIM companies, where they try and keep you in the dark, you know?
Yeah, look, Justin, I think I've been a reasonably prolific investor myself, along with everybody else, in small cap AM companies. I've done well in some, done unlucky in others. But nothing drives me as mad as just to read, oh, a discounted placing done. Why was I not included? So look, we want to be very open. I think people worry about getting their placings away. So I think we announced we're doing it. We are doing it. We're putting our money where our mouth is. The insider group are following our money. And I just think, look, anybody who wants to participate, A, can buy the shares in the market. And we're being very open, and all I'm trying, the guidance I'm doing is that I don't believe in discounted rights issues. I think management teams should put their hand in their pocket, contribute, that's what I'm doing, and get it done. And that's what we're doing as we speak.
Yeah, and of course, people invest because they want to make money. Now, you've been, I've sensed your enthusiasm build. When I first started talking to you before this deal was in the bag here, you know, you had that exit strategy about 2-3 years in the line. Then all of a sudden, as you got towards this acquisition of Avivo, you got very excited. And since it's now almost done, you've said it's a sleeping giant because there are several things this company has, and it's transformed as well, but there's several things this company has, you're very enthusiastic about it. And just explain for people not aware of the challenge models that they have. I mean, I know they have their own laboratory and ensuite facility in Whitechapel, which is worth a lot of money, replacement value. But tell us about the challenge models, if you could.
Yeah, look, the reason I'm hugely excited about this company, and that's probably an understatement, is look, first of all, this company, HVivo, has raised 113, that's 113 million real cash sterling in his last 6-7 years. They spent it, it's gone. The reason we got it very cheap is they're closed out of cash, hence the reason I underwrote to fundraise to make sure they can do it. But look, a lot of that money was spent on a world, the only 24-bed quarantine clinic that you do all these viral studies, vaccines, and that's in Whitechapel. It's part of, on the site of Queen Mary's Hospital. It's a fabulous facility. Replacement cost could be a very large sum of money, 10, 20 million. They have on-site Europe's probably only vaccine virology laboratory, which you need. Again, many, many millions. But really importantly, what they have, challenge studies are a kind of unique way of testing anything to do with respiratory, anything to do with vaccines, anything to do with our friendly old coronavirus that's causing all the panic in China. Challenge studies is what you test the vaccine against them. They're small. They're 100 to 120 people studies. And but to make them work, you need a challenge study model. HVivo have 8 of them, and they're making it very public. They have 2 flus, 2 RSVs, 1 HRV, 1 asthma, 1 cough, and 1 COVD. They have 2 competitors, SGS in Switzerland, a monster 20 billion market cap. I gather SGS has only 1 model. We've got 8. And there's a West Coast in America company has got 1. And we've got 8. So a big to replace that portfolio, and this is we've been told of those challenge study models, which you need to run the trials, they're nothing to do with products, would be 20, 25 million. So that gives HVivo the world leading position. So anybody anywhere in the world wants to test a vaccine or any do it respiratory, their first port of call is HVivo because they have the clinic, the lab, most importantly, the challenge study models, and that's complements of the 113 million was spent. And bear in mind, what did we pay for HVivo last week? We paid 10% of the invested capital that's gone in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes absolute sense. And so, you also, HVivo, like I said, you are building a pharmaceutical services company. So you provide services to the big pharma companies. It's you've always had this cost plus, so there's good margins there. And I think where HVivo run into a sticky ground was they started to, trying to develop their own products, is that right?
Correct. Look, HVivo has been around since 89, standalone since 92. They're a really good services company doing challenge studies. That's all they've ever done for 20 or 30 years. 7-8 years ago, they got what one would say the hot cash arrived, the Winford money, etc.
Yeah.
And they gobbled it up and tried to develop their own vaccines. Every CRO in the world tells you you're either a service provider or your drug discovery manufacturer. You cannot be both of them. And the problem with this company, it tried to develop it. It has still got them on its balance sheet. They've got a universal flu vaccine that's completed phase 2. And they have a mosquito vaccine on their balance sheet. No money's going into that. We're focusing on making this a profitable services company. And those products we have sitting on our balance sheet will be licensed out and that could come good for us, but we're not focusing on them. So yeah, where it went wrong, it thought it was a biotech company, it thought it was in drug discovery. The future, far as I'm concerned, for Smolium companies is profitable services, cost plus, and that's where we're focused on. We're not interested in discovery. Discovery means high risk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But also, like you say, you still have that that could go well as well. Because as we see now with coronavirus, you said it's always, you know, it's sort of solutions are always been looked at for that. But I was just looking at, and so Avivo and Together Venn Life Services, there's a lot of synergies here. Like you say, you can do CMC, preclinical, phase one now. Before you couldn't do challenge study and lab services, but now you can do pretty much offer a full suite, can you, to these pharma companies?
That's the reason, Justin. This is the fastest takeover of one public company on the London Stock Exchange of another public company in 7.5 years. And the reason is the two companies are absolutely fit together. Challenge studies are really sticky. The problem is they're 3 to 5 million, and they then get asked to do phase two. And before a challenge study, they get asked to do phase one preclinical. Our friends in HVivo turn that work down. They have no capability. Guess what? I've been running Venn Open Orphans last year, killing myself trying to find phase two work, killing myself trying to find phase one with too many staff and not enough work. And now the team, I love Trevor Phillips and Tim Sharpie, because they're now taking over from me this week. I'm now the chairman, just be in the background, but very hands-on. And now they can ring up every one of the existing customers and say, hey, folks, remember that phase two study you asked us to do last year and the previous year? We can now do it. So, yeah, it two of them fits together like a glove.
So are you confident now that these two companies together can sort of generate decent cash, decent returns, and go to profitability?
Absolutely. Look, both were loss-making. We've slashed, and it's well-known in the market, in Open Orphan Venn, very substantial, with the aim of being profitable. We've taken a lot of decisions to improve profitability. HVivo, likewise, have taken a lot of overheads out. 11 million annually is taken out. We've taken 4 million out of our overhead line. So yes, both companies, the plan is the merged companies now, we've taken lots of actions to be profitable. And we're now trading 30 million market cap. That's about 1x our revenues. So I think the metric is everybody else in the pharma services cost plus trade 2x or 3x revenue. When we now get re-rated in the market and get, we're not profitable as of today. So yeah, we're priced right. But in the coming weeks and months, as the mood music goes out and as we can declare we're profitable, we expect to see our market cap re-rate from currently 1x revenues to 2x revenues and hopefully 3x revenues. So that's the opportunity.
Yeah, well, let's be honest. I know lots of companies are valued at several times revenue and loss-making, you know, on AIM. So it's not a stretch, to be honest, is it? Let's be honest. People need to realise this. Cool. Okay, Kyle. Well, for anyone listening right now who likes the sound of this but are not yet following the story, just give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Thanks, Justin. Yeah, look, I think we're making big claims with big plans, but hopefully people will trust me now. We took over Venn in the end of June. We've now done our second deal as guided. We've transformed both of them. So first of all, we're moving fast. We're doing exactly as we said. Say, trust us and we'll do it. We've done it. The second reason is we still, as a management team, have a very substantial investment in the company. We're locked up for 3 years. As a management team, we're adding to our position in this one. And the third one, Justin, is basically we've said our aim is to take small loss-making AIM companies, strip out the losses, make them profitable, consolidate them. So you could say as we're the kind of fixer-uppers of damaged companies, a bit like buying a fixer-up of a house, tidied up and move it on. And that's, we're unabashed to be saying that. We're fixing them up, moving them on. Hopefully that kind of explains our strategy.
Marvellous stuff. Kyle, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Justin, as always, thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Yeah, no, very good. Thank you. Very good.
Do you know what's interesting about shares is that sometimes you can look at companies on traditional sort of valuation metrics, and it's fine. And that works, you know? I mean, like Warren Buffett always stood his ground, didn't he, when the dot-com boom happened and all that, and tech started becoming very popular. He said, well, I don't understand the valuations these, so I'm standing out. And he obviously, because of that, he missed the pop. But there are certain things I like. There's a company out today, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, called Blue Prism. Now, they do robotics and stuff, right? And literally, their revenue, let me just get the revenue up here, but their valuation is nuts. It's, you know, it's cutting edge tech. They're up 17% a day. They're now valued at $1.1 billion. Their revenue was $100 million. They lost $75 million.
Correct.
And they are burning a lot of cash. It's one of these things that's very hot. And I can imagine there's plenty of investors who want to chuck money at it because it is in robotics and automation and all this stuff. So yeah, it's a very hot future, you know. But I'm thinking, I don't want to jump in here because I need to raise money. And I'm sure maybe we'll chuck money at them. But I still can't invest at this level. $1.1 billion on $100 million in revenue and losing, you know, $70 million. But it's nuts, isn't it, really? I think, what do you do in this situation?
It is. Yeah, no, you can't. I mean, I think, and you could actually talk about even bigger companies. I mean, Tesla in the last day has gone through $100 billion market cap. And or Netflix even the other day came out with some numbers. Still burning a huge amount of cash. You know, neither company is profitable, but there's that hope factor. And obviously, in times of excitement in the markets, the hope factor can be very influential. And you know, we both lived through the TMT boom of the turn of the decade, of the turn of the century. And you know, that was all on hope, and fundamentals got completely thrown out the window. We all know that in the short term, the market's a voting machine. It's fear and greed, excitement or disappointment. And obviously, there's a lot of excitement with such stocks. In the long term, it's a weighing machine. Are you actually going to change the world, generate cash and whatever? But yeah, you know, you look at some of the established tech names today. I saw the other day the first set of numbers from Alphabet, or Google as it was back then. And you know what was interesting was, of course, it was trading on a big multiple to revenues. It was making profits, but of course its earnings multiple was huge, and look what happened to it. So it can happen, but I have to say the risks are much, much higher when you're losing money, burning cash. It's just, it kind of forces that time scale. They need to show something soon. Otherwise, Mr. Market might say, hang on, guys, you need to raise money. You need to put yourself in a better stead before we're going to back you again. So,
The trouble is they can travel.
You've got to be careful.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, it's like this market at the moment. You know, it can keep going up for longer than, you know, is logical, like I say. And like as I said, the thing is, they've grown. Full year revenue this year is $101 million. Last year was 55. So they've done a, you know, 80-odd percent, 83% growth in the revenue. Lost this year is 71, but look at that. The loss last year was 21, so they've almost tripled that compared to their doubling of their revenues. So
what's the balance sheet like, Justin? How much cash do they have?
Which I think they have, let's look there. They've got about net cash 74. So literally, they've got another year's run pretty much before they. But who knows if the cash burn maybe go up, if it's going up like it is, you know, if they're increasing, if they're having to buy those sales somewhere, but although the R&D costs are massive, then that may be scarred. Yeah, I mean, you know, Tesla is not seen now. Like what I saw, I tweeted out yesterday that they are now the most valuable automaker, overtaking Volkswagen. They are double the combined, they're more than the combined size of Ford and GM together. Because people have not seen that as a car company. They're seeing it as a tech.
No.
You know, because apparently it's going to be batteries and all that stuff, isn't it? And
precisely.
If they discover the battery that will give you 1,000 hours driving or something, then... Yeah, and obviously, if they're piling the most amount of money into it, then it's you know, it's probable or it's possible that they will be the company to discover that battery that, you know, changes us from the petrol fuel, fossil fuel derived sort of energy into battery, because that's the main sticking point with batteries at the moment. So who knows.
That's it. I mean, it's all on that hope, absolutely. And particularly, I think, the Chinese plant opening, you know, clearly they're working closely with the Chinese government, and we all know the potential size of that market, etc. Yeah, it's all on hope, no doubt. I mean, in terms of numbers, Tesla is patchy, to say the least. It's all that hope factor.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. All right, so what are you looking at? What's the first stock?
Well, we got to think a little bit about ASOS, or is it ASOS? I'm never really quite sure which one it is. But obviously, this is a big company now. Obviously, online clothing has been a huge growth of the market over the last 10 or 20 years. They've done remarkably well since their early days of As Seen on Screen. And the shares have been tremendous for anybody who's held them for a long time.
I don't think anyone has, apart from maybe the old director, because let's be honest, like I said, they are the best performing stock ever on AIM. And last time I looked at it, someone said, if you just chucked £1,000 in at the start of the IPO, you'd have about 170 grand at the top. So that's a nice return. Crikey. But yeah,
no, that's very nobody does that. Absolutely, and half the battle is patience. You know, probably when you doubled your money, you probably scurried out or something like that. But the last couple of years have been much more difficult. Shares are well off their highs because they've had some growing problems. It's not that they've stopped growing. I mean, today's numbers talking about 20% revenue growth, but they've had issues with distribution, with rising costs, hitting margins. They've been pushing out, internationalizing the business. You know, they see the States as a huge opportunity. They're big there, in Europe as well, and obviously the UK. They've been having a lot of teething issues. I have to say, today's statement, the reason why the shares are up when I last looked 7-8%, is kind of a return to sort of a slightly more normal kind of statement. 20% revenue growth, remarkably kind of akin revenue growth in all different regions, States, UK and Europe. There's a little comment about, sure, gross margins being impacted by them investing into the business, into the distribution and whatever, particularly in the States where they see a huge opportunity. But in terms of their expectations and everything else, they're not changing or cutting them, which contrasts markedly with some of the statements that we saw last year. So there's no doubt there's a bit of a relief bounce in there. I think there was a bearish brokerage note out yesterday, which hurt the shares. So there's a bit of that kind of coming back into the stock today. But I think what I would infer from today's statement, and again, it's just a trading update. It's just sales. You know, there's not much in terms of cash flow or profits. You know, that will come with the fuller statements in a couple of months' time. What I'm taking from it is that I think the company is moving beyond their sort of their troubles of last year. And that can only be good for the share because in terms of what these companies need, you know, and ASOS is indicative of that. What it needs is to keep on showing not just revenue growth, but execution as well. And all these problems with distribution and whatever, you know, it was not a good sign. But they seem to be getting beyond that. And then, of course, because they're now trading at a big discount to things like Boohoo, which have executed much more flawlessly over the last year or two, people can start saying, well, hang on, if Boohoo is trading there, should ASOS be actually trading, you know, back to those sorts of multiples and levels as well? So that'll be the debate this year.
Yeah, I didn't realise Boohoo at 3.6 billion was ASOS at 2.7.
Yeah, that's it. What's remarkable is that you go back 2 or 3 years, it was completely reversed. Completely reversed. So Boohoo, it's all what it's done. Now, you could argue, again, this is where you come back down to strict fundamentals and the like. They are both trading on, you know, still quite punchy multiples, no doubt about that. There's a lot of debate about ASOS, whether they've actually bitten off more they can chew in terms of having to invest in their business. They've lowered their sort of net cash position. They moved into a slight small debt position, whilst Boohoo still has cash on the balance sheet, seems to have done its expansion. It too is expanding in the States and Europe and whatever else in a more sort of sensible and sustainable, or at least execution problem limited sort of fashion. So, you know, lots of debate ongoing. I have to say this is a sort of seemed like a stabilization statement from ASOS, which can only be good. And then, as I say, the debate can start again as to what an appropriate valuation for their share is. My feeling is if they can crack the States to a greater degree than they already have, and, you know, to be honest, I think this is an area where actually the UK names, the Boohoos and the ASOSes, are actually in a good position. I think for ASOS shares to recover back towards that 40 quid level is very, very plausible. So actually I'm heartened by today's statement, and my feeling is actually if you're a believer in online fashion and, you know, you sort of like the space, and I think there's many reasons to do so, this is one actually to be liking.
Yeah, do you know what? It's very interesting. I'm just looking at Boohoo's trading update last year. Now, they updated 4 months to the 31st of December, and their group total revenue is $473 million. And ASOS have done 2019, and it's 1.1. So literally, it's sort of like for like, you know, if ASOS is a bit boozed a bit more on the revenue side. I don't know about margins.
Yes.
But looking at the growth there, is, you know, 44% for Boohoo, the growth, pretty much, and ASOS is 20%. So you could say even though they're bigger, Boohoo, they're still growing faster. Obviously, that depends on the margins, how much they're earning, but and all that stuff. But, yeah, it seems at the moment Boohoo, 44% compared to 20%. So that's, it's amazing.
That's right. No, Boohoo's been doing better. That's why the market cap is higher. That's why they've had the momentum. Naturally, though, you've also then, you're going to be starting lapping those tough comps. Now, this is where you sort of dig into which one's got the best business model and the like and everything else. Yeah. My observation would be probably the truth is somewhere in the middle, and that ASOS has sort of underperformed its potential a bit recently. I think Boohoo, you know, booted the ball out of the stadium in terms of its competence. Yeah. It's just been remarkable. And good luck to them, frankly. My feeling would be if you're somebody with sort of a little bit of a value kind of bias, then ASOS, you probably would. But if you were sort of saying, hang on, you know, I'm aware of thematic changes, I'm trying to get my head around this, then the recovery potential in ASOS up to that sort of 40 quid plus level, that's a bit more discernible, I would say. I don't own either the share, to be honest. So, you know, that's my, if you like, my value view on it. But my observation would be institutionally, I think ASOS is probably, if you believe that they can stabilize the ship a bit more in terms of all their credibility, then that probably goes to 40 quid. Whilst Boohoo, I think, is a hard one to call here, you know, particularly as management sold a big chunk of shares just south of 3 quid a couple of months ago.
Yeah, and it's that thing again, isn't it? It's you know, that's why shares are so interesting. It's like, look at the charts, ASOS, like you say, it's come down from 75 quid a share in mid-2018 to around about 25 quid it went down to at the start of 2019. It's trading in a range now from 25 to 35 quid, but it hasn't peaked. Now, Boohoo's been top right of the screen all the way, pretty much. And so you think, after a while, are you going with momentum? But after a while, momentum will fade. So, you know, it's true. Are you going with the recovery power of ASOS or the momentum of Boohoo? It's up to you. So there we are. But always very interesting. Who knows? Okay, let's... you could say that Boohoo's had no problems as yet, whereas ASOS have. They've had to address that, and they came out the other end now, like you say. Okay, cool. What's next, Chris?
Another one in the sort of the retail space, Hotel Chocolat, which no doubt many listeners have visited one of their stores over Christmas, maybe bought some presents or maybe luckily received some presents from one of their stores. They came out with a trading update today. Again, superficially, this is a trading update. It's a bit more focused on revenues. This was to the half year up to the end of the year. Revenues were up 11 and 14% for the sort of quarter four and the half year period, respectively. So very solid revenue growth. And most of that was organic. I think they said that 3 percentage points was due to the expansion of the store network. So you're still talking very high single-digit organic revenue growth rates, which frankly is very, very good in this very patchy retail environment. So thumbs up from the revenue side. They did, again, sort of say something about costs. I mean, what they said was that there were some extra costs involved in sort of delivering that growth, which is to be expected. You know, as a company gets bigger, more complicated, opens new stores, or in Hotel Chocolat's case, expands a little bit more in other places such as the States and Japan, you know, you're going to expect some extra costs. That's not unreasonable. They didn't quantify it. They did sort of say still that broadly trading was in line with expectations in terms of profits, but I'm looking forward to the fullest set of numbers next month when things such as, you know, where the margins precisely are and everything else will become apparent. But you have to say, very good performance from them in a patchy consumer environment. Shares have been very strong over recent months, perhaps people anticipating this. Very, very good performance. I have to say, though, a bit like Boohoo, they've done remarkably well. Valuation is very firm, and despite the fact that I like their products, I can't bring myself to buy the shares, not at this sort of elevated level.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I do think there's a niche place for it, and I think they have to expand. I mean, I think every part of their market is going to be quite small, so they have to expand across the world to get a decent revenue. But I mean, do you know what's quite nice? And I think this could be good for them, because if they've launched, I just looked at a Velvetizer in-home chocolate system. This is where you make your own chocolate. It's about 100 quid to buy, and they have a subscription model on that, which is, I don't know how often you're going to make your own chocolate in the house, I don't, but it seems like a bit of a, let's do what, the whole company smacks a little bit of novelty to me. I don't know why. It's like one of those things you try once or twice, but you wouldn't be a regular. I don't know. Maybe there are staunch. But this is what I like. What I kind of like is this. The nut milk, our originally creamy new milk chocolate, which happens to be 100% vegan. I think that's a very good idea. Because I've tasted sort of vegan Magnums, and they're not as good as the Magnums themselves. I got from Aldi recently, and they're not as good. I think if you can crack that, where you can actually have a substitute that's price wise and taste wise, you can't differentiate between that and the real thing. I think it's a win win. So if they can do that and have kind of chocolate that's exactly the same, tastes as good, same price point, I think you've got a win win situation there.
That's absolutely true. And the Velvetizer is interesting. I saw that as well in their shop windows, and 12 flavors now. And that subscription sort of market, that is a sticky sort of market. It is clearly a premium product, as you say. Quite a lot of money to buy the original bit of kit, and
that's
then
a
no
chocolate
doubt.
Chocolate machine, sorry, not a chocolate machine. Yeah, sorry, yeah. Hot chocolate machine.
It's a hot chocolate machine. Yeah. That's right. It's you want your hot chocolate at home, and there will be a market for that, and that's quite nice for those repeat customers. But get this, their VIP system membership has now 1.1 million members, which is a lot of people. That is not quite one in 50 people in this country is a VIP member of Hotel Chocolat.
Yeah, I looked at that. But I thought, does that generate any revenue? Or what?
Well, what they do is they try and upsell you, don't they?
Yeah.
So they because it's all about marketing, isn't it? In the sense that, that's right. You mail out and you basically say, look, we've got this product, this new product, as you say, the new vegan chocolate, the Velvetizer, and it's just another way of getting in front of people, particularly as maybe they're not going to the stores physically as much as before. Clearly, online sales become a more important thing. So, I think it can only be good, can't it? Good businesses get in front of their customers in a myriad of different ways. And whether it, as you say, quite what the metrics are, but I would say it's much better to have 1.1 million members than not on these things.
That Velvetizer, it's the kind of thing I would buy for my wife. I know she likes hot chocolate. But after a couple of uses, it's sitting in the cupboard with a bread maker or something. One of those things you think you need for the home, but then it's basically a novelty. Anything else, Chris?
Quick one on Mothercare, which, is still trading on the stock market, despite the UK business going into administration in the last couple of months. They've come up with an update today, and honestly, you and I talked about Mothercare before and basically concluded, why on earth were people bothering? Even though they perceive an opportunity in the international markets, they're talking about 40 international markets they're looking to be active in or currently are active in. They're talking about having Boots as a franchise, sort of the exclusive franchise operator from some Mothercare products in this country. The actual statement and the actual sort of financing is so full of kind of red ink and uncertainties. I really wouldn't bother. The company, you may recall from the last corporate update, had declining like-for-like sales internationally. Obviously, the UK business was a complete shocker and clearly is being closed down completely in terms of the physical stores, etc. They've got debt, and even though they said the debt will be a bit reduced because, of course, once you go into administration in the UK, you can maybe write some of that off. It's so messy and so opaque that anyone who's still a Mothercare shareholder, what have you been doing over the last couple of years when it was clear that the company was heading towards the wall? But number two, it's still trading. They're talking about trying to minimise dilution for shareholders, talking about potential money raisings and weirdo bank loans. For goodness sake, life's so much easier just to... Well, it's kind of strange. You've got convertible structures and this and that. Honestly, once it gets up to that level, exactly. What you have to say is, look, just if there's a market, and the shares are down 8-10% today, if there's a market in it, for goodness sake, just sell up, accept your loss, move on, and make your life a lot easier.
Yeah, no, exactly. You keep it simple. It's I always think that, and whenever I get into a point where I'm looking at it and I can't work out, it happens a lot with small cap companies as well. When they do, if I start reading an RNS about a funding, And then it loses me within a couple of sentences. Just leave it alone. There's plenty of other opportunities out there that don't need this kind of structure. And you don't need to make... I don't know if all these quotes attributed to Warren Buffett are from him, but he said something like, or him or Charlie Munger said, so, you know, investing is not like Olympic diving. You don't get points for difficulty. And that's the point. Try and keep it simple. You know, otherwise... you get yourself wrapped around things, you can't understand it. It's one of the golden rules. If you don't understand it, stay out. Simple as that.
Precisely.
You
know? Yeah, that's
to me,
right.
To me, mother care is one of these problems, you know, industries that lend itself to really being fragmented because anyone could do it with a half-decent social media channel, and you get these influencers from TV that have kids. They can set up their own. So what Mothercare should have done at the start is basically brought on board some of these people who are influencers, you know, and worked with them. And the trouble is now, it's so fragmented, that industry, they're not going to do it. And that's the difference between this and, say, Halfords, for example. I still see Halfords having a good chance of being still the big dog in the market, because it's hard to be an influencer and push what they have, like bikes and car repairs and all that. But it's almost like, you know, my wife and me, we're not very good at DIY and bikes and all that and cars, but we trust the brand Halfords. I've been there several times, I like them, and they can still be a winner online, I feel, and I still feel their shops are very worthwhile as well. So I think that's the difference between, say, Halfords and Mothercare. Mothercare, it's a fragmented industry and they can't control it anymore. They're not the number one dog, and it's been, you know, they've lost momentum, haven't they? They lost it, lost the grip.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And if you are a shareholder, I would say to anyone listening, I would say read today's regulatory news statement and make your mind up. I mean, if you believe in it, then good luck. I mean, frankly, I looked at it and I thought to myself, yeah, this one, they're working very hard, clearly, good luck to them, but in terms of equity value, I'm afraid, sorry, it's not going to go there. Yeah, it's going to go to bondholders and the banks.
Well, you know, there's a problem when you mentioned it to me just before we came on. I said, what are you talking about? You said Mothercare. I thought, are they still listed? You know, when I thought they'd gone through. And when you're even questioning whether they exist anymore, you know they're on an unsure footing. Marvellous. Thanks for that, Chris. And we'll speak to you next week.
Sounds good. See you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Serica Energy, down 1.94% at 121.60. At four, Immu Pharma, down 3.36% at 14.4. At three, Cadence Minerals, up 6.4% at 6.65 pence. At two, Botswana Diamonds. It's a border sticker there, of course, non-mover today at 0.675 pence. And the number one most followed company is Vesarion, VRS ticker. Yeah, it's up a tad at 0.63%, 79.5 pence. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, it's Epwin Group year-end update and notice of results. At four, Way Education, exercise of options. Been quite quiet of late, Way, haven't they? At three, Extract Resources, drilling update on Eureka, Kajiva and Zambia. At two, United Oil and Gas, update on Ash 2 well and acquisition timetable. That was yesterday, of course. And number one most liked RNS came from Avacta Group, trading update. I like the tech there, but seemingly, you know, overvalued. They're saying they're going to do revenues of 5.5 million, which is 100% growth, very good growth. But they made a loss of like 11 million for the first half. They've got cash, but they're still burning a lot of cash. So it's one of those things I put on my watch list, but as yet, you know, they're still burning a lot of cash there. I like to look at companies that are either at cash flow positivity now or heading towards, or very close to generating cash flow, you know, rather than burning it. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.